everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations nationwide, 7 days a week over North America, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on whatever happened to the American farmer right after this. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on this Law Hour program are just a small part of my two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure, and this class includes lessons ranging from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits and evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And I don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school in this class. Now, for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to my website, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the family farmer. I told you the story about the pigs of the Okefenokee. The American farmer has been swallowed up, just like capturing the wild hogs of the Okefenokee. They were swallowed up over a long period of time, beginning back in the 1930s. They lost their independence. They took the free government corn. But it's worse than that. If I were to ask you, are you a practicing communist, or how many of the American farmers turned to communism? Do you practice communism? Does America practice communism? Well, you know, fortunately for us, we're the good guys in white hats. The guys that practice communism are the bad guys in black hats over across the Atlantic Ocean, you know, over there in the neither reaches of Russia, in Eastern Europe, China, North Korea. Those are the communists. Fidel Castro, down in Cuba. We Americans see ourselves as being capitalists. You know, you have communists on the one hand and you have capitalists on the other. We Americans are the capitalists, aren't we? That's what I learned when I went to school. And the communists are these bad guys over in Russia, and they practice communism. We're not quite sure what that is, how it works, why it works that way, but I thought I'd share with you today a little of this thing called communism. Now, Ingolf Vogler, in his 1981 book called The Myth of the Family Farm, Agribusiness Dominance of U.S. Agriculture, aptly describes the fate of the egalitarian ventures by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now, I guess I should give you credit right here, where credit's due. I'm taking this from the Agribusiness Examiner, and you can subscribe to the Agribusiness Examiner. It's free. They just ask that you send them a donation from time to time to help them keep the Agribusiness Examiner coming. I recommend $25 a month, but if you can't afford $25 a month, I'm sure 15 or 10 or 5, whatever you can afford, would be a good price. The editor and publisher is A.V. Krebs. His email address is avkrebs@earthlink.net. It's an easy one. All you have to do to receive the Agribusiness Examiner is send your name and address to avkrebs@earthlink.net. And we're talking about whatever happened to the American farmer. You know, as long as economic practices such as the seed distribution plan are not profitable, the state, the government, the USDA, provides these services. But once these activities become profitable, business interests like Monsanto and ADM and others want to take them over, and usually the state or the government lets them. By improving agriculture, the USDA created a very profitable private market for agricultural products and services. And in this way, the United States government subsidizes agribusiness in the name of free enterprise, and then taxes from the many enhance the private wealth of a few, such as the sugar monopoly and the ethanol monopoly. ADM has the ethanol monopoly, and a wealthy Cuban family down in Florida has the sugar monopoly, and the peanut monopoly is created by the USDA, the U.S. government, administered by the USDA, and people like Jimmy Carter participate in that monopoly. Not the average Joe Sixpack American farmer or farm family. These are multi-billion dollar multinational corporations. And the USDA has one USDA employee, a bureaucrat, for every 16 farmers in the nation. That's twice as many bureaucrats mending the farm as there are teachers teaching school. Yeah. You see, the teachers teaching school have 32 students in their class. The USDA has just 16 farmers. Now, when I asked the question, are you a practicing communist, I know you answered no. So let's take a look at this thing called communism and see if it's had anything to do with the demise of the American farmer. Communism, as we know it today, goes back to 1848, and a fellow by the name of Karl Marx entered a competition in Paris, France, at the International Socialist Union. And he submitted his ideas, his concepts concerning communism, and he won first place. He won the prize. And so it is today that Karl Marx gets the credit for this concept of communism, a political and economic and social ideology, a political ideology that's been accepted and spread throughout the world. Well, everywhere except here in America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and England. Most of the world accepts socialism, and they accept it as a part and parcel of their political ideology. Well, at least that's what I learned in school, didn't you? Now, the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purposes. It's expressed in Land Use Bill S-268 and EPA rules DNR land acquisitions and property condemnations. It's just exactly the opposite to the biblical instruction in Leviticus 25, verse 23, which says, "The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, for you are strangers and sojourners with me." So the first plank to the Communist Manifesto is the exact opposite to the land law of the scripture, of the Mosaic law that's contained in Leviticus 25, verse 23. Heaven forbid that farmers in America would adopt the first plank to the Communist Manifesto and abandon the law of Moses. Well, let's analyze it for a minute. You know, I'm from a far, far land called Idaho. And out in Idaho, one of the western states, 64% of the land in Idaho is owned by the federal government. Only 36% is in private hands. Now, the 36% that's in private hand is taxed, and we call this a property tax, a land tax. And if you don't pay that property or land tax, then the state of Idaho will come in and take your property away from you and sell it on the courthouse steps. So we have to pay the property tax, and the property tax goes to, primarily, 75% of it in Idaho. 75% of all of the land taxes, property taxes collected in Idaho, go to education, which is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for free education for all children in public school. We'll come to that in a little bit. But here you are in Idaho, 36% of the land is privately owned, 64% is owned by the state. The money collected goes to public purposes, which is what the first plank calls for. The abolition of property and land and the application of all rent, property tax, goes to public purposes. So at least in Idaho, the first plank to the Communist Manifesto is in full force and effect. The second plank calls for a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Well, the income tax, called the 16th Amendment, Title 26 of the United States Code, Title 42 of the U.S. Code, and 11 chapters of Social Security go hand in hand. It's the exact opposite of tithing. God asks the question in Malachi 3, verses 8 through 12. He says, "Will a man rob God?" And he goes on to say, "Yet you have robbed me." But you say, "Wherein have we robbed you, God?" And God answers, "In tithes and in offerings." And he goes on to say that you're cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. "Bring you all of the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Eternal of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be enough room to receive it. And I'll rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and you shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Eternal of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, says the Eternal of hosts." Now that's Malachi 3, verses 8 through 12. I noticed up in Idaho that the farmers of Idaho don't practice tithing. Well, maybe I should take that back. Most of them are Mormons, and they practice tithing to their church. I don't think they give very much to God. But they do tithe to their church, at least the Mormons do. And they also tithe to the USA Incorporated, and it's called the income tax. I've observed in America that most farmers prefer to pay the income tax to tithing. And as a result of that, they're cursed with a curse. Well, at least that's what the Bible says. And if you take a look at the population of farmers in 1920 at around 45 million, that includes their wives and families, of course, down to 1.9 million in the year 2004, wouldn't you say the demise of the American farmer has been a curse? I wonder how much the second plank, the heavy progressive or graduated income tax, has had to do with the demise of the American farmer. Now, the third plank to the Communist Manifesto, third plank, that calls for the abolition of all right of inheritance. Inheritance tax laws implemented by the marriage license. I wonder how many American farmers have marriage licenses and pay the inheritance tax. And it violates Deuteronomy 21, verses 15 through 17, where it says, "If a man has two wives, one beloved and the other hated, and they have borne him children, both the beloved and the hated, and if the firstborn be hers that is hated, then it shall be, when he makes his sons to inherit, that which he has, that he may not make the son of the beloved firstborn before the son of the hated, which is indeed the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the son of the hated for the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he has. For he is the beginning of his strength, the right of the firstborn is his." That's Deuteronomy 21, verses 15 through 17. I noticed in America, and especially in Idaho, we practice inheritance tax. Now, don't we? Inheritance tax. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity. We've been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations. These are cartels and bureaucratic institutions in our modern society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs and doctors to manage and treat our health problems and lawyers to direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. You know, it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by our paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, rights, liberties, and duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by simply calling the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or if you're online, go to the website and send me an email request. That's georgegordon.org. Click on the email machine and send me an email request. It's just that easy. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. God forbid that you would be one of these practicing communists, but I wanted to point out that many years ago, I, George Gordon, was a practicing communist. I practiced all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. I'm happy to know that most of you probably have never done that. So I thought I would go through them, because America's farmers, when we ask the question, what's happened to them? Where are they today? We've gone from 45 million back in 1920 to 1.9 million in 2004. They've certainly gone somewhere, and there has to be some kind of a cause and effect relationship, wouldn't you say? So when we look at the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, talking about the income tax, we see in Matthew 6, verse 24, God said, no man can serve two masters. Well, we in America do. We can, if we're religious, we tithe and pay the income tax. I would contend that we owe one or the other, but we don't owe both. And so, on the other hand, you have the tax protesters. Most of them don't tithe and don't pay the income tax. So you got this wild divergence of opinion over here. Tax protesters don't pay the tax or tithe. And then, of course, you got the religious people. They tithe and pay the income tax. I contend you owe one or the other, but you don't owe both. Then when we get to the third plank to the Communist Manifesto, which deals with inheritance, have you ever wondered about the death tax, the inheritance tax? It's brought on with the marriage license. You know, most people have marriage licenses, don't they? See, that marriage license is a three-party limited general partnership. Yeah, it's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And then one day your spouse dies. And you say, oh good, Bob died, I get all the toys. And then the state comes in and says, not so fast there, Mabel. Not so fast there, Mabel. Buy me out. And it just happens that the state takes about 28 to 35%. 28 to 35%. One-third their fair share of the inheritance. Don't they? So there's the third plank to the Communist Manifesto. Now, I mentioned the word tax protester. If you get uppity with the government now, that's Baal, the god Baal, the USA Incorporated. If you get uppity with them and say, well, I'm not going to pay this inheritance tax. I'm not going to pay this income tax. The fourth plank calls for the confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. And it's implemented by regional government, that is, absolute federal control over all property, both public and private. And God has a little bit to say about it, too. He says, if you will not hearken unto me, and if you will not do all of these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning ague, that shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. You'll see that in Leviticus 26, verse 14, 15, and 16. That's Leviticus 26. Now that's the penal clause chapter. You'll also see the penal clause chapter, or the balance of it, in Deuteronomy chapter 28. Let me ask you this. Have America's farmers been put under this curse of Leviticus 26, 14 through 16? If you will not hearken unto me, but will not do all of these commandments, and if you despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but you break my covenant, I will do this. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, the burning ague. Thou shalt consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. Sow your seed in vain. Aren't you farmers going out and borrowing money from the banks at 10 or 12% interest? Sowing your seed, and then isn't that seed then sent down the river and sold to your enemies in Russia and China and around the world? Aren't your enemies eating your seed? Aren't you sowing it in vain? And have you noticed, America's family farmers, that you're being driven off the land by your own government policy? So thought I'd share that with you, because it looks like to me that this practice of the fourth plank to the Communist Manifesto has come back to bite us in the butt, wouldn't you say? Fifth plank calls for the centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. That's called the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, where Congress delegated power to coin money to the international banking cartel. It violates Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 13 through 16, where it says, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God giveth thee. For all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Eternal your God." I think the farmers of America have abandoned gold and silver coin and gone into banking. I remember when I was in the farming business, at least commercial farming, I used to have a checking account, credit cards. Why, we took a check from the creamery, deposited it in the bank, and wrote checks to all of our suppliers. You know, when I went to pay the fuel bill, I paid the Standard Oil Company, you know, with a check. I think most farmers do that also. It's a violation of Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. The centralization of credit in the hands of the state is done by way of the Federal Reserve Bank. It's an exclusive monopoly that's given to these private bankers. You know, the Federal Reserve isn't federal, it's private. So says the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Then the sixth plank calls for the centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. That comes under the Federal Communications Commission regulations and Executive Order 10,995, which provides for the takeover of all communications and media in the United States. Then we have the Department of Transportation regulations and Executive Order 10,999, which provides for the takeover of all modes of transportation. You'll see that in the Federal Register. It violates Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33, where it says, "You shall make no covenants with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you." America's farmers have been making contracts and covenants under the various and sundry farm subsidy programs with the United States government and the various states. these covenants and contracts violate the statute in Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. There are four of those statutes, four covenant statutes, four statutes that bar us from making contracts with the civil law state, these foreign and alien gods, and that causes us to violate the statute in Leviticus 18, verses 3 through 5. Yeah? Yeah? When I was in the farming business, you know, the commercial farming business, I'm still a farmer, but I gave up my communist practice. I discovered that my practice of communism drove me off of the land. And I discovered that my practice of communism was not profitable at all. So I gave it up. But I'm glad to know that the rest of my fellow Americans do not practice communism. The seventh plank calls for the extension of factories and the instruments of production owned by the state, and the bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. We see that in Leviticus 25, 1 through 10, there's a prohibition. You shall number seven Sabbaths of years unto you, seven times 7 years, and the space of the seven Sabbaths of years shall be unto you 49 years. And you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement shall you make the trumpet sound throughout your land, and you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and you shall return every man to his possession, and you shall return every man to his family. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. You shall not sow, neither shall you reap that which grows of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in it of the vine undressed, because it's the jubilee. It shall be holy unto you, and you shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. And in the year of this jubilee you shall return every man to his own possession. And if you sell aught unto your neighbor or buy aught of your neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. And according to the number of years after the jubilee you shall buy of your neighbor, and according unto the number of years of the fruits shall sell unto you, and according to the multitude of years you shall increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of year you shall diminish the price of it. For according to the number of years of the fruits does he sell it unto you. And you shall not therefore oppress one another, but you shall fear God, because I am the Eternal your God. Have you ever known a farmer to practice a jubilee or a land Sabbath year? I don't. I never did when I was in commercial agriculture. Now that I'm in private agriculture, I practice the land Sabbaths and jubilees. Next year will be a land Sabbath. 2012 and 13 will be a jubilee year. Yeah, I don't think that America's farmers have been practicing land Sabbaths and jubilees, and I notice that they have been removed from the land pursuant to the statute in Leviticus 26, verse 34, 35, 36, long in there. Yeah, the penalty for the failure of practicing land Sabbaths and jubilees is removal from the land. And sure enough, America's farmers have been removed from the land. I can't speak for you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders, but I suspect that you're probably suffering from the same problem. So the extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, where I'm from, is called corporations. And the bringing into cultivation of wastelands is called the Desert Land Entry Act. And the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan, those are called soil conservation districts. Now, do you have corporations, acts of Congress like the Desert Land Entry Act? Do you have soil conservation districts in your state? God forbid that you should be practicing communism. That's the seventh plank to the Communist Manifesto. Now let's take a little break here and we'll come back and take a look at the 8th, 9th, and 10th when we return. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court is a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said he who fixes his own pipes is a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said he who fixes his own steps is a fool for a client? Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about these young budding lawyers graduating from law school. He said, quote, "It's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." He said it's worse than that. Most of the students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. If you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom Strategy and Procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to my website, that's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Click on the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and what happened to the American farmer. The American farmer has been removed from the land and deported to the city under the 9th plank to the Communist Manifesto. And the statute in Leviticus 26, verses 34 and 35. Here's what God had to say about this thing of land Sabbath. He said in verse 34, this is Leviticus 26, verse 34, penal clause to the contract. He said, "Then shall the land enjoy your Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate and you be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy her Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you dwelt upon it." Now, America is not in national captivity yet. We're just headed for national captivity. But in order for the land to be vacated of the farmers, the first step is we've got to throw the farmers off the land. And so the U.S. government policy from 1933 to the present time, with every succeeding farm bill, has been aimed at destroying the American family farmer and driving him from the land. And that's what's happened. But it's not for no good reason. It's because the American family farmer would not obey the 15 agricultural laws that regulate farming. And the 15 agricultural laws, once they're violated, demand a penalty. You see, boys and girls, you can't have a law without a penalty, because if you did, you wouldn't have a law. You would have a suggestion. So a law is a commandment that says you shall do this or you shall not do that. Can you imagine the income tax law if there wasn't a penalty? Thou shalt pay thy income tax. But if you don't, there's no jail, there's no fines, and there's no penalty. How many people would pay the income tax? The reason you're paying your income tax is because you're afraid. You're motivated by fear. And you're afraid that the government's going to prosecute you and fine you, jail you, or take all of your toys away from you. And people are a whole lot more fearful of the USA Incorporated than they are of the living God. But I would suggest that we start thinking more about the penalties that God invokes. Because, you know, you've got a law that says, thou shalt not commit adultery. We Americans love adultery. It's part and parcel of our national psyche. It used to be against the law to practice adultery in America. Today it's a civil right. But you still have AIDS, herpes, and VD, the penalty for these immoral activities are called STDs. We call them sexually transmitted diseases. You know, you get such things as gonorrhea and syphilis and AIDS, and then you get some lesser ones, you know, like hepatitis and herpes and a few others. And these diseases take their toll, and ultimately they kill you. So you're entitled to 70 years of life, 70 years, 25,550 days. If you die before you're 70 years old, you didn't collect all of your benefits. That's a penalty. People that die before age 70 have paid a penalty. All right, we're on the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. Thank God none of you people out there practice this, but I wanted to come out of the closet and admit to you, I used to be one of these practicing communists. I practiced all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. I'm happy to report to you today, though, I'm not practicing any of these 10. The eighth plank calls for equal liability of all to labor, and especially of industrial armies, especially, or the establishment, rather, of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. Especially for agriculture, industrial armies. This is implemented under the Federal Emergency Public Works Program's Executive Order 11000, and it provides for the mobilization of civilians into government work brigades under government supervision. This comes under Social Security. This is the Social Security Act of 1935. They only do this to people with Social Security numbers. The Social Security number puts you in the National Industrial Army. Farmers were exempted until 1954, but then they were included. Now, farmers all went down and signed up for Social Security in 1954 because of the benefits that they received. I remember old Russell Harvey told me that he signed up in 54 and he received Social Security benefits. He retired, went on Social Security. He never paid anything in. And he received all of the benefits. Well, that was just real special, wasn't it? But he was a farmer, and he was a farmer that joined up with Social Security, the National Industrial Army. God said that wasn't such a good idea. In Deuteronomy 24, verses 14 to 15, he says, you shall not oppress an hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of your brethren or of the strangers that are in the land wherein or within your gates. At his day you shall give him his hire, and neither shall the sun go down upon it, because he's poor, and he sets his heart upon it, lest he cry against you unto the Eternal, and it be sin unto you. You know, when I first started in agriculture, I was a 15-year-old kid, and I got paid once a month. I didn't get paid every day when the sun went down. Farmers in America do not pay the hired help on a daily basis. Farmers in America hire, and then they pay them, you know, once a week, once a month, or something on that order. They don't follow that statute. And I just wanted to share with you this fact that America's farmers, 96% of America's farmers between 1920 and today, have been evicted from the land. There are 15 agricultural laws. This is just one of them. When you don't follow this law, there's a penalty to pay. America's farmers have paid the penalty. That's what the law requires. Read them and weep, as they say down at the Blue Room. Then we come to the ninth plank to the manifesto. Ninth plank. It calls for the combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries and the gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country, by a more equitable distribution of population over the country. This is implemented by urban renewal, population control, metro regional planning programs. Now in Leviticus 25, verses 1 through 7, here's what God has to say about it. He says, the Eternal spoke unto Moses in Mount Sinai, and he said, You speak unto the children of Israel, and you say unto them, when you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the eternal. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the eternal. And you shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. That which grows of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, neither gather the grapes of your vine undressed, because it's a year of rest unto the land. And the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you and for your servants, and for your maids, and for your hired servant, and for your stranger that sojourns with you, and for your cattle, and for your beast, that in your land shall all of the increase thereof be meat. In Leviticus 25, verses 1 through 7. How many farmers have you ever heard of that practice the land Sabbath? Once every 7 years, they don't farm it, they let it rest. It's the system that God designed into the program here to revitalize or refertilize the land. American farmers are sophisticated people, man. We're not a bunch of superstitious animals or Neanderthals dragging our knuckles on the back of the ground. Why, we've got OrthoGrow, DuPont, and Standard Oil. We're out here putting chemicals and sprays and dyes on the land. We know how to grow things. I know, I was a chemical farmer for many years. And I went out there and I chemical farmed. And I put chemical fertilizer on and I sprayed with DDT and all kinds of neat stuff, you know, that organophosphates and so on. You know, I was a pretty modern, up-to-date farmer. I just wanted to point out, though, that as a result of that, there's a penalty to pay. And this combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries and the gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of population over the country. That more equitable distribution of population over the country occurred like this. In 1920, you had 45 million farmers and families living on the land. Today, you got 1.9 million. That's a decrease of 96%. How did that occur? Well, over the years, little by little, the population dropped from 45 million in 1920 to 32 million in 1940 to 15 million in 1950 to 6 million in 1969 to 1.9 million today. And it's been accomplished through the USDA and U.S. government policies, programs. You know, the land bank, the set-aside program, price subsidies, and so on and so on. The farm policies are announced to people as being the saviors of the farmers are the USDA, the government bureaucrats. We're here to protect the family farmer. But we got the exact opposite result, didn't we? I mean, the government couldn't come to you and say, well, our policy is to throw all of the family farmers off of the land when half of the people in the country are on the farm. They couldn't come out and tell you the truth, could they? Our objective is to create a new world order and to throw all the family farmers off the land and to make everybody dependent upon the state. So they came to you and said, no, we want to protect the American farmer. We want to save you. We're going to protect you from corporate agribusiness. Did you know the USDA owns the patent on GMO seeds, along with Pioneer and Monsanto? Just thought I'd share that with you. You know, the USDA is in competition with the multinational corporations as partners. They're in competition against you, the family farmers. They've destroyed you. They've thrown you off the land. You wouldn't practice the land Sabbath. You wouldn't practice the Jubilees. You wouldn't pay your hired help at the end of every day, and you had 45 good reasons why you should not practice these 15 agricultural laws. And in the final analysis, when it was all said and done, Leviticus 26 has come to pass, has it not? Stand by, I'll be right back. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedures class. This class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. Now, rule number one is don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 86% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. Now listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation, and indeed in some cases, police intimidation. The first judge put it this way. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? He said that in United States versus Dickerson. A second judge in Belknap versus U.S. said, you can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. A third judge put it this way. He said the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent as well as the innocent and the farsighted. That comes from Marchetti versus United States. You know, judges tell us where the rubber meets the road. For more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free. And these CDs, sometimes I get asked the question, these CDs are playable on a CD player. You don't have to have a computer. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education also. They play on an ordinary CD player. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, O-R-G, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. I just wanted to tell you, I used to be a practicing communist. Fortunately, we Americans don't practice communism, now do we? Oftentimes go into an audience and I'll ask the question when I make this first lesson. This is lesson one, by the way, of my tax and status school. 46 things you need to know about tax and status. If you don't want to pay the income tax or Social Security, there's some things you need to know so that you can be square with the law. You know, the trick to all of this is to obey all the laws all the time. You have to obey all the laws of the United States, all those socialistic, communist do's and don'ts. And then you have to practice all of the law of Moses and all of the law of your state. And you got to do all of them simultaneously. There's a little trick to doing that. Jesus, the Messiah, was able to do it. He practiced all the law of the Roman Empire, all the laws of Judea, and all the laws of God, did them all at the same time. Remember, he was called perfect. He didn't violate anybody's law. And there's a little trick to learning how to do that. Well, this 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the free education for all children in public schools. It calls for the abolition of children's factory labor in its present form and the combination of education with industrial production. Now, this is accomplished in the United States with federal aid to education and government-controlled schools. God had something to say about that. He said, only take heed to yourself and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the rest of the days of your life, but teach them to your sons and your sons' sons. Especially the day that you stood before the Eternal your God in Horeb, when the Eternal your God said unto me, gather me the people together, and I'll make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children. You'll read that in Deuteronomy 4, verses 9 and 10. That's one of six education statutes in the Bible. Americans do not educate their children at home to the standards of the Mosaic Law. They send their children to public schools to have them educated to the standards of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. In fact, this very 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, you get that? The 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for free education for all children in public schools. How many of you sent your children to public schools, and how many of you have been educated in the public schools? God told you to educate your children to this Mosaic law. Do they teach the Bible in public schools? Hasn't the Bible been outlawed in public school? Well, I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. And I can't imagine why anybody who wants to practice the Mosaic law would send a child to public school under the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, but Americans do. I can't speak for you Canadians and Australians, New Zealanders and English and so on. I don't know what you people do, but here in America, we practice this 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. 47 million American school children go to public school. They're educated by the state, and we've banned the Bible from public school. I just thought I'd share that with you. Let me ask you this. How many of our Bill of Rights or principles from our federal constitution have been adopted by Russia, China, or Cuba? Have the Russians or the Chinese or the Cubans adopted our first amendment to the federal constitution, which calls for a free press? Have the Cubans adopted the free exercise clause of religion? Have the Chinese adopted the First Amendment free exercise of religion for the people of China? Well, not the last I'd heard. I don't think that the communists have ever adopted any of our Bill of Rights. Like the Fourth Amendment, or right to be secure in your person, houses, papers, and effects, or the Fifth Amendment, the right to eminent domain, or the right, to remain silent, and things like that. It seems to me they kind of use torture. Kind of reminds me of Americans at Abu Ghraib prison over in Iraq, isn't it? Torture, instead of the prisoner has a right to remain silent. I wonder how many prisoners down in Guantanamo Bay have the right to remain silent. Huh? Of course, torture is for a good purpose. After all, it's for America, isn't it? I don't think that we Americans practice the Bill of Rights. I think we Americans practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And furthermore, I think our President George Bush is a practicing communist. And I think John Kerry is also. Yes, sir. They both belong to Skull and Bones. They're both dedicated. Both dedicated to the New World Order. Let me share a little something here with you. You remember a guy by the name of Gorbachev? He used to be the premier of Russia back in, the Reagan years, in the first George Bush years, 1989. Well, essentially, our military and other resources are being used by the Council on Foreign Relations globalists as the spearhead of the New World Order. Not as global Pax Americana, as there's nothing American about it, but as an extension of the Soviet model of communist expansionism. This is to lay the foundations by force for a one-world government under a socialist United Nations administration. That is the core of the Bush Doctrine, and it was his father's agenda. It is the agenda of all globalists at the top levels, and Bush Sr. admitted it in the following statements. You remember George Bush Sr.? See, we were all worried about communist expansion, weren't we? Communist expansion. We were worried about the domino theory, remember? We were really concerned. The communists, they took over Russia, and then they took over Eastern Europe, and then took over China. They were threatening Taiwan and South Korea and Japan and the Pacific Rim and Vietnam. And so we had to step in there to save the world from communism. Then suddenly, in 1989, communism just disappeared from the world scene. Who's the military power in the world today threatening little, small, independent nations? Like Grenada, Panama, Colombia, Afghanistan, Iraq. Listen, America has now taken the role of the Russians. We're the ones that are going around the world with our military forces today, smashing these little countries around the world and bringing them in and under the New World Order. Now, let me show you that. Here's George W. Bush. George Bush Sr. Listen to his words. George Bush Sr. said, "We will give Gorbachev our assurance that America welcomes this reform not as an adversary seeking advantage, but as a people offering support. I will assure Gorbachev that there is no greater advocate of perestroika than the President of the United States, George W. Bush." Remember this perestroika, you know, this is a goody-goody two-shoes program for we want to be friends with Russia. Now, President George Bush, when he was addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations on February 1, 1992, said this. He said, "It is the sacred principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter." Sacred principles. Sacred. Sacred. Sounds kind of religious to me. "To which the American people will henceforth pledge their allegiance." You Americans are going to henceforth pledge your allegiance to the sacred United Nations. That's George Bush, February 1st, 1992. Now, Bush's comrade Gorbachev, the guy who's in the Presidio in San Francisco, the former Russian premier, he's over in San Francisco, California, and he's there in the Presidio. That's a military complex owned by the federal government, and he is supported by your tax dollars. And Gorbachev, Bush's comrade Gorbachev, admitted that communism would never go away if he could help it, and that perestroika was a mere cover for merging the United States and Russia under Leninist socialism. Leninist socialism. And Mikhail Gorbachev, in a speech to the Soviet Politburo in November 1987, here's what Gorbachev said. He said, "Gentlemen, comrades, do not be concerned about all that you hear about glasnost and perestroika and democracy in the coming years. They are primarily for outward consumption. There will be no significant internal changes in the Soviet Union other than for cosmetic purposes. Our purpose is to disarm the Americans and to let them fall asleep." Now that's George Bush Sr. and our friend Mikhail Gorbachev. I just thought I'd share that with you for a minute and let you see that America has taken the role of the Soviet Union in global expansionism. And the people that need to be brought under control are the Muslims, the Arabs. They're a bunch of wild men, sand jockeys, running all over the Middle East with all that oil out there. And this guy Saddam Hussein, you know, he wouldn't join the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank and insisted on getting paid in gold for his oil. Gold! Can you believe that? What a reactionary. No wonder we had to go over there to Iraq and throw that fanatic out of office, demanding gold for crying out loud instead of American dollars. Yeah, I'm running out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, right here on The Law Hour and Editorial Review. You've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on the Internet and 29 AM and FM stations across North America. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. Says our time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.